Thanks, Brian. And good morning. And yes, if you want to go and discuss that with Isabel, there's an opportunity to do so. It's probably worth mentioning, Isabel, that our focus this week is on the bit of that passage that talks about adultery. Next week, we're going to pick up the divorce thing. So we've got a fun 2 weeks ahead of us. But that's okay. It's good to explore some of these topics and see what God has to say about them, to see what Jesus says about them. But before we get into the detail of that, I just want to sort of step back a bit and think about the big picture of what is going on, where we've got to in the Sermon on the Mount. If you remember a couple of weeks ago at our church weekend, we were thinking about those challenging words of Jesus about being salt and light in the world. Challenging as we are brought to realize that we are the people to whom God has given the responsibility of seeking out and protecting what is good, having nothing to do with things that are unhelpful or tear down or cause abuse or suffering, going out into the world with the light of Jesus in us and allowing that light to shine into the different situations we find ourselves in. That was what we were reminding ourselves about 2 weeks ago. I wonder how that's been going for us all. Has that been our experience? Have we seen and have we taken those opportunities to be the people that we are, to be the salt, to be the light that Jesus says we are, that Jesus enables us to be? And in some ways, this Sermon on the Mount develops with Jesus looking at some very practical and real things, showing how his followers should engage with them, how they can actually be salt and light. What does it mean in worked out daily life? Where Jesus is calling for behavior that is recognized to be good and right, but beyond that, he's looking for his followers to have right attitudes, clean thoughts, deep respect for others. And last week, Val introduced us to a couple of those themes as she explored what Jesus said about keeping the law and how he called on people to not just obey the command, in that case, to not murder, but to go beyond that, to avoid anger and cursing and so on. She talked about the reality of anger, how it is a God-given emotion that can trigger positive responses to the injustices we see around us, but also that sometimes we need to recognize and deal with the anger that has been birthed within us so it doesn't become something hurtful and damaging. How have we been doing with that, I wonder? Have we been able to manage any anger that we may be feeling? And so that's the sort of thing that Jesus is doing in this part of the Sermon on the Mount, is looking at very real, practical, day-to-day things and saying, this is how I expect people who follow me not just to behave, but to think. It's challenging. So last week, as we were thinking about this call to not murder, we were reflecting on basically some words that were triggered by the sixth commandment back in Exodus chapter 20. This week, we move on to the seventh commandment and what Jesus has to say about that, which in Exodus 20 verse 14, we find, you shall not commit adultery. And Jesus, as a Jew of his day, seems totally convinced that adultery was wrong. He does not seem to be expecting anyone to disagree with him. He's simply stating a well-understood and generally recognized principle of his day. But he goes further, and he challenges people about their attitudes, about what is going on in their minds, about what they choose to focus on. and as we'll see in a moment, is actually going to challenge them about some of the ways in which they were applying this law and how they thought that law applied to them. So he's reflecting on some of the laws and principles of living which God has given to his people. He gave to his people hundreds of years before. And he's calling those who had decided to follow him to be part of God's kingdom to a deeper and more challenging example of that. His words would have disturbed and shocked some of his followers. You can imagine thinking, well, I haven't been doing that stuff, and now I'm being told I shouldn't be thinking those sorts of thoughts. It would have challenged. How did this sit with us as we hear them today? How are we, as people who have chosen to follow Jesus, to act in this part of our lives? What impact should these words of Jesus have on us? And how do they challenge some of the accepted norms of the culture that we live in today? And I will suggest some answers to those questions. But before I do that, I want us to think a bit about the context into which Jesus was speaking. 2,000 years ago, nearly, thousands of miles away, a totally different context, a totally different culture. How would his hearers then have understood it? And I think there's some key details in this passage that are worth looking at and exploring and understanding before we think about what does that mean to us today. And the first question, I think, that's worth thinking about is what do we understand by adultery? In the Old Testament and in the time of Jesus, it was clearly understood what it meant. But it meant something different if you were a man or a woman. It was understood to mean that a man should not sleep with a married woman, and a married woman should not sleep with anyone who was not her husband. So it wasn't evenly understood. And the idea was, that it was generally understood in the Mediterranean area where Jesus was speaking to, that a married man could sleep with any other unmarried woman without that being seen as wrong, whereas that was not true for women. The context, what was expected of men and women, were different. And part of the reasons is that in that day, women were generally seen as property of their husbands. So being with somebody else's wife was making use of their property and not to be allowed. The punishment for this was execution by the community. We find this in Leviticus 20, verse 20. It was not only acting against the foundation of married life, it was acting directly against God's laws, which the whole community were to uphold. That was the context in which Jesus was speaking. And these ideas of women being treated as property, capital punishment for these offences, do not sit well with us today. We struggle with them, and I believe rightly so. But it is important to understand the context into which Jesus was living and speaking, and people around him would have understood. So that's what was understood when Jesus spoke about adultery. But then there's a question, why does Jesus speak to men? In these words, he is speaking about men's behavior. He has nothing here to say about women. And I think this understanding of what was going on helps to explain that. He's trying to redress some of the unbalance between men and women. And we'll see this picked up again next week. He wants to encourage husbands to stay faithful to their wives. He doesn't see any need to speak to women because it's generally accepted that they would. but it doesn't mean that his words don't have something to say to women in our context. It wasn't only just men who engaged in this behavior. We see accounts in John 4 and John 8 that suggest that to us. But the major issues seem to have been with men, and this is what Jesus is addressing. And from what we see around us today, I would suggest the same continues to be true. Even as the challenge of Jesus comes to us all as to how we live in relationship with others. Jesus uses powerful imagery to convey his thoughts. Tearing out eyes, cutting off hands. He is not actually calling for his followers to physically do this. He's using hyperbole. He's using a figure of speech to try and get them to realize the severity and importance of what he's talking about. And one thing that fascinates me here is that Jesus is not calling for the establishment of some form of thought police or official censor to be in place, noting where people are not living or acting in the right way and taking some punitive action against them. That is not what Jesus is calling for. He is calling for each person to be aware of what we are doing, of how we are behaving, of what we are thinking about, of what we are focusing on, and asking whether that is consistent with the life to which he is calling us. How many of us take that time to be self-reflective, to think back on things we have done or thought during the day, or to be monitoring ourselves during the day to ensure that we are living as Jesus calls his followers to? It is good, it is important to have people to whom we can choose to be accountable. But what Jesus is laying out here speaks about a personal responsibility for each one of us to be living lives that really honour each other and don't act in a way that would violate that. And another question I just want to explore briefly: what did Jesus mean by hell? He says, if you behave inappropriately like this, you are in danger of hell. And in case people miss his point, he repeats it. He wants them to realize that this is important and there are consequences for behavior that he is calling out as wrong. But what was he actually referring to? The actual word that's translated as hell here is it's a Greek word, Gehenna. It's a place name, actually. It refers to a valley just outside Jerusalem. It has a terrible history. At the time of Jesus, it was a place that people wanted nothing to do with. For many, many years, child sacrifices had been offered there by God's people, in sacrifices to other gods. King Josiah abolished the practice there a few hundred years before. Prophets spoke out against it and said that this is a place where God's judgment would be carried out. In the time of Jesus, it was a place where rubbish was burned along with the bodies of criminals. It was a place you did not want to go to. You didn't want to think about. It carried with it memories of terrible things done in the past, a place of God's judgment, a place where fire burned, where nothing good was found. And Jesus is warning against acting in such a way that people end up there, subject to God's judgment. And it does remind us that Jesus and the Bible generally do speak about the reality of God judging those who do evil and the importance of being on the right side of that. We do that by recognizing that we have all sinned in different ways and accepting Jesus, his sacrifice on the cross, as a way in which that wickedness can be dealt with and our relationship with God can be restored. So that's something of what Jesus was saying and how his hearers would have understood it. But what does that mean for us today? How do those words of Jesus travel through the centuries and those thousands of miles to speak to us? I think it's important to recognize that his words were challenging in his context, and they are challenging today. What he's doing is he's taking the seventh commandment, you shall not commit adultery, and he's adding the challenge of the tenth to it. You shall not covet. You shall not want something that you should not have. As well as not seeking to have an intimate relationship with someone who is not a spouse, Jesus is calling us to not harbour secret desires for such a relationship either. As I mentioned, in the time of Jesus, many married men, thought that such thoughts and behaviours were not just okay, but healthy and normal. And from comments I see on social media and elsewhere, this is still true today. We live in what is often called a consumer society. I think that means it's based on the idea that we will all keep on buying things. And I think one of the implications of this is it's easy to lust after, to want things which we don't really need, as we are subject to continual bombardments of advertisements everywhere we look. It is often less that we want something someone else has got, but we want something just like it, or even better. Sometimes being part of this consumer society can result in some amusing moments. Some years ago, my mother, in her mid-80s, joined the internet age in a very limited way. She had no computer, she had no internet at home, she did not want any of those things. But we did find out that some of the things she wanted were only available from Amazon. So we signed up, we started ordering some things from Amazon, and they got delivered and everything was fine. But two or three times a week, she was sent an email with hot offers, which were presumably things she could not do without. She didn't have a computer, she didn't have access to the internet. I got those emails instead. 1 week, don't forget, 85-year-old lady, pretty much confined to home, spends her days reading, listening to hymns, doing crosswords, and talking with friends on the phone. The things that Amazon determined she needed were PlayStation 4 consoles, the latest things in camping and hiking goods, and top brand baby essentials, including an offer for 20% off the price of nappies. This is actually what happened that week. None of those were relevant to her. It was easy to ignore them and wonder about the accuracy of Amazon's algorithms. But sometimes it's more challenging, as we see adverts for things put together by clever marketing companies who seek to convince us that we can't live without whatever they're trying to promote, or that we won't be fulfilled until we've upgraded to the latest gadget, or got the most recent theology book, or whatever. And so there's this general idea that in our society we are expected to seek after things which we do not have, because they're necessary for our life. And I think this can make it easy for us to assume that it's okay to live this way in terms of relationship with others as well. I think it's probably fair to say that in our society, adultery is still generally seen as wrong. But it is something that is all around us. It's covered in great detail in many celebrity magazines. We share everything, even our boyfriends. It's a common staple for stories on TV programs. It's standard fare in many books. And it can be portrayed as exciting and liberating. Where often the focus is, what happens when the betrayed party finds out, as opposed to thinking about the morality of the action? It's not about what is right and wrong, it's about what are the consequences. In a world where the individual is important. In a world where personal happiness is the major goal, this is going to happen more and more. But what Jesus seems to be saying is not just that the action is wrong, but the desire to do that is wrong as well. And I think one of the reasons is that these inappropriate desires can lead to wrong actions. We'll particularly see that next week as we continue to explore the question of divorce. So these things are wrong in themselves, and they can progress to greater wrongs as well. One of the sad examples of this in the Old Testament is the story of David and Bathsheba. We started with David seeing Bathsheba, desiring her, and ends in David committing murder to get rid of the husband who stood in his way. So not only does he fall foul of what we're talking about today, but he doesn't score many points with what Val was talking about last week either. And one of the easy and frequent responses of the Christian church is that there is so much of this going on in our society that society needs to change, society needs to repent of its lifestyle. And that is true, and it would be a good thing. And as Christians, it is important that we seek to engage in our society, to speak for what is right, to be salt and light. We need to call for a more moral society as opposed to a strictly consumer one. But that is not the point Jesus is making here. He is not saying that society should change. He is speaking to those who have chosen to follow him. He's speaking to those who are willing to live on earth as citizens of heaven. And it's to these people Jesus issues these challenges. Are we prepared to model a way of living where we refuse to allow inappropriate desires to take hold of us, and where we do not seek to have what is not ours? Jesus asks challenging questions of his people. And I think those questions come down to us today. So to help think about that, here are three questions to consider. How much, really, if we're honest with ourselves, are we influenced by the consumer culture we live in? What impact do these words of Jesus have on how you think and how you will act? And yeah, how can we be salt and light in this world, in this area of life? You might say, and I hope it's true, I don't act in this way. I don't have desires to act in this way. But what can we do to be salt, to be light, to change the world that we live in, to be a place that is more aligned to the good plans that God has for how people should live? I'll give you a moment to look at those. I'll pray. I'll hand back to Heather or Rachel to finish up. I'll hand back to Rachel for one final song, if that's okay. Father, I want to pray that if these words of Jesus challenge us, that we will take time to reflect on that and to think about what he is saying, to think about what it means to us, and whether there are things that, on reflection, we need to change in what we are doing or how we are living or how we are thinking. And that we would be open to that and reflect on it and be faithful to the way in which you are calling us to live. And from that place, help us to know how you are calling us to be salt and light in this area of life in the context in which we live, in the communities that we are part of, in the places where we work. Father, help us to put these words of Jesus into practice, we pray. Amen.